Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined today by Utah assistant coach Tim McDermott, who is not here in his official coach capacity, though he is in the office and sporting the colors. Rather, he is here in his author capacity. We talked to another author earlier this fall, in Frank Kelly of the Kelly Group and FCA Lacrosse, and we talked about that book, and now we get an opportunity to talk about The Dojo Decision, a lacrosse journey with author Tim McDermott. How does that term hit your ear? Are you used to being called a published author yet?
Oh, man. No. And I don't think I ever will be. You know, I never sought out to be an author. You know, for me, it's exciting, right? But it's also a little nerve-wracking. And you as a creator know more than me. So somebody who's been through it multiple times, I could be very interested in hearing your thoughts. But for me, it was like a Jerry Maguire moment. You know, when he's writing that memo, he has his epiphany, all his ideas, everything he believes in, he starts writing it down. And he did it late at night. I did my writing earlier in the morning, you know, feeling great. But when he hit that send button and it's out there to the world, you know, great, this is what I believe in, but still nerve-wracking, not knowing how it's going to be received. So yeah, it's kind of the feeling.
Well, I don't want to let your question fly by. I do think that one of the things that's a key distinction between the type of content that I create versus this book is, you know, I and Inside Lacrosse tend to focus on telling other people's stories, right? Insofar as, you know, that is the type of content we're creating. Obviously, a lot of times we're, you know, analyzing or whatever, and that obviously comes from your own point of view. You know, I have dabbled intermittently with opinion writing, and the reason I haven't been more consistent is because of the comfort that I have in that role, right? Especially relative to, you know, the role of communicating what's going on or what's happening as opposed to how I or we as an organization feel about it. But that being said, you know, I know that it's important, and I know that it has a role in how we develop as a voice, as an organization. And so there have been times where we've really leaned into it. And it's funny because one of the things that I find is going back to the pieces that have pertinence and that I feel strongly about way, way more than any analysis or news piece that I tend to write. So, you know, the ones that stand out in my mind are, I think it was 2016, I wrote a piece about lacrosse's need for a universal calendar and the, you know, universal start dates and end dates and how it could coincide with a reimagining of the NCAA tournament, the end of the season. And it's 8 years or 9 years later, and I still feel strongly about those opinions, and they're still germane. And so I find myself sharing that link with some regularity. And you know, more recently, it's been some of the stuff around the future of college athletics. But generally speaking, you know, those are opinions on an industry. They're not necessarily an opinion on how to navigate an ecosystem, which is exactly what the Dojo Decision is about. And we're going to get to that in a little bit. But first, I think that it's always helpful to learn a little bit more about the voice behind the idea. So do you mind just sharing your autobiography a little bit for those that are unfamiliar with you?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, real quickly. You know, I grew up in upstate New York, went to Homer High School. I played lacrosse there. After there, I went to Geneseo State, and I was a pretty good face-off guy, but that was kind of before the time of Fogos. So wanted to play offense, wanted to play defense, wanted to stay on the field. So that was a good fit for me. Got to Geneseo. They made me a face-off guy. You know, played a little D-middy, but my skills just weren't even there to stand out on offense or defense. So was able to graduate early and had the opportunity to go to Loyola College in Maryland at the time. You're a fellow Hound as well, right?
That's right.
So, yeah, grateful for Coach Toomey for giving me that opportunity to go to grad school and play for them for a year, get a chance to play in the NCAA tournament. After graduating, I moved down to Richmond, you know, try to get a job in the real world in sales. And I was sitting in a cubicle making calls and just not enjoying life where I thought couldn't be doing this for 20 years. So at the time, my brother was playing at the University of Virginia, and I just wanted to be around good people, and they had an excellent staff. I had got to know them through my brother. They're looking for a face-off coach, so I got on board, coached there for 2 years, and then I had an idea where I was trying to create a business where you could compare a California player from a kid in upstate New York or Maryland, measuring mental intangibles, physical intangibles, and just evaluations. So I was trying that out. I ran into a guy who did is the Troutwine athletic profile, which was used by Bill Belichick. And they were actually at the convention when I met them. It was really cool. It was spot on for our athletes. So worked for them for a little bit, traveled around, left coaching for a few years. And then I was out in Utah and living there, ran into Adam Gittleman, who's a good friend of mine. We were out skiing with him, Marcus Holman, Will Manny. And they were like, I think it was a powder day. And I'm like, they're like, man, we got to go coach. And I'm like, ah, you're missing it, but I'm kind of missing coaching. So like, we're a club team. We can have as many coaches as we want. So I'm like, all right, I'm all in. So headed down there. I met Coach Holman. I'd known him a little bit when he was at Carolina. I was at Virginia, but just hit it off with his mentality, how he wanted to help these kids be the best they can be on the field, off the field, and really just bring out the best in them. And so jumped on board, doing that, working on the side. And then when they started moving to the direction that they were going to go to be a Division I program, I jumped on in the director of ops role. And then continued on when they made the coaching change. I stayed on and being an assistant coach with Coach McMahon. And that's where we are now.
Nice. Before we move on to the book, I want to go a little deeper into some of the mental performance stuff that you had briefly touched on, because I think it's interesting, because I think it dovetails pretty closely with elements of the book. And I think because, that was an area in which you and I started to communicate a little bit more a few years ago. So can you just dive into a little bit more as to what it was and how you used it most specifically at Utah?
And at Utah, we use it. It's more if kids want more. Coach McMahon's got a great system set up. We got tons of support from a lot of people. But if they want more, I'm always here. I think the kids know I'm pretty passionate about this kind of stuff. But yeah, peak performance is amazing. And it doesn't matter if it's lacrosse, right? Basketball, or starting an entertainment, company like you, it's we all want to be the best we can be, right? And that comes, there's a process. It's not just genetically, we're not just born being good lacrosse players or being great at what we do. If we put in the effort, right, and work on our habits, we can always improve. So that's always been a passion of mine and just kind of stepping outside your comfort zone and being the best you can be. And a lot of us, I think that's why a lot of coaches in our industry who are just awesome people, they want to help these kids get better. And that's kind of our job is to bring out the best in them. And that's helping them decide exactly what they want, right? And then helping them figure out the price to get what they want. And that's the habits they choose for themselves. And then help them get busy paying that price by giving them, different inspiration, different tools so they can show up every day being the best they can possibly be.
So, like I said, I think that's a good place to set the platform for this book. And there's a lot to dive into. But just to jump, why did you feel compelled to put your thoughts down on paper and then produce it to the world?
Yeah, and I first off, I mean, that's the purpose, right? It's to systemize something I could replicate to help the players I coach and now the readers bring their best every day. And that's helping them decide what they want, decide their habits, and then get busy practicing those habits. And why I wanted, three real reasons. The first is I think everyone needs a mentor or a coach to bring out the best in them. And what this book is designed to do is to be read with a coach or with a friend or a teammate. And it's almost written in a style where it's a screenplay, so you can go back and forth. It's linked to a lot of great ideas, 2-minute videos where you can really dive into the source of the material. But that's really helped me having a mentor, somebody you can lean on. And this book can fill that role because not everybody has a mentor.
So, and I think that's a good kind of window into the title, right?
Oh yeah, the dojo decision.
Go ahead, let's hear it. Like, how did, I mean, obviously it doesn't correspond closely to lacrosse, right? Like, when I think dojo or when I hear dojo, I think martial arts. How did you get to the how did you get to that point?
Yeah, I read it in a book somewhere. The dojo decision. It's whenever you step into a karate dojo, or a lacrosse field, or a basketball gym, or any area of your life, you got to make a decision. Do I train like a white belt, right? Just showing up, going through the motions, or do I train like a black belt, going for mastery, being totally present, trying to be the best I can possibly be in my craft? And when you train as that black belt mentality, that's where the joy is. That's where you find your unlimited potential. So that's the start of the book. The first chapter, it's all about commitment. And the dojo decision is committing to be the best you can be every moment of every day.
So, I want to get into some of the meat of the book, particularly around recruiting, navigating the landscape, and advisement, which is, a big thrust of what you try to accomplish. But before getting there, you mentioned that you were an early morning writer. I do think that the process of writing a book is compelling and interesting to potential listeners because, I think most folks have experience writing something, right? And, in the majority of our lives, it's a post on social media or a comment or a text message and then scaling up into an email. And maybe some folks listening have to, write memos or papers for work or they're, students and they have to write a lot of papers for class. And then obviously you get into a smaller subset of the population who has to, write more extensively for a living. And I think that as it gets more extensive, the amount of pressure builds up because the most common problem that people run into is the phobia of the blank page. And so overcoming that and then continuing to move forward is the first step towards producing something. And then you get into revision and then you figure out, how it gets to the point where you want it to actually end up living. But with all that being said, there's probably a pretty strong correlation between the process of getting started and what you just described when it comes to the dojo mentality in terms of I'm going to show up and write this thing. Do I want to do it as if I'm a white belt or do I want to do it as if I'm a black belt?
No doubt. And for me, and everyone's different, but the mornings, it's really hard to have a bad day if you have a great morning. So I'm up early, usually 4:30 or 5. And mainly that's, I like to work out at 6, but to work out with the guys I work out with, I got to mentally prepare. So I get up early, go through my routines and talk about that in a lot of the book. It's all about, deciding who you want to be, but then practicing the habits and routines to be that person. So for me, that was waking up, right? I want to get a win for the 3 areas of my life, my energy. So I roll out of bed, try to get my body moving because I don't want to feel groggy. So I get my burpees in, usually have some kind of inspiration written on the mirror when I go there, drink some water, and then listen to some inspiration. And that inspiration usually gets me writing. So yeah, kind of that's the time where I'm able to, my mind starts churning, and if I can get that done, a lot of my paperwork done after that, then the rest of the day, you can be in the office and just be there for the guys.
Did you start with an outline and write to it, or did you go kind of beginning to end more sequentially?
Outline for sure. For 10 years, it's a really interesting story and kind of goes into mentors. And back when I was at Virginia, Coach Darger would always have the best one-liners, at the end of practice to get the boys juiced up or just saying the right thing at the right time. So I was just searching YouTube, and I ran into this guy, Brian Johnson, who started a company, Heroic. Really just great content. He had read over 700 books, takes the top 10 big ideas from each of them, and then he ties them all together. So he's saying all these different authors, all these different great coaches, they're all saying the same thing. So those same things were the outline of the book. So if you go through it, it starts out with commitment and it goes into wisdom, which wisdom's their goals, just knowing the big game everyone's playing in this world, which is to be happy, to have joy. And then it goes into self-mastery, which is discipline. So we got to wake up every day and work towards that goal. Then it goes into the chapter on energy. And in energy, right? You can't do anything if you don't have energy. So that's a really important thing to work on. And then courage and confidence, a chapter on hope, a chapter on gratitude. The second half of the book is leading others and teamwork. So first you learn to lead yourself, and then you learn to lead others. And it ends with passion and continue to wake up every morning and strive to be your best.
So that's a really helpful breakdown of what folks are going to encounter. But at the same time, the, you know, text that's on the bottom of the cover is how to get recruited to your dream school and perform at your best. So maybe the second half of that sentence is very obvious in the outline that you just laid out. But the first half of the sentence seems a little bit more tangible and you know, at the expense of sounding maybe too clinical, maybe even transactional. So how does recruiting factor into this book in total?
Yeah, and really, Terry, that's kind of a hook to get kids to read this. And that was another purpose, to try to write a book that's interesting enough and specific to the reader I'm trying to attract, that they want to read the book. You know, there's a lot of great nonfiction books out there that are fantastic that I reference throughout here. And really, I'm just trying to lead people to these other great ideas that I'm just putting them into a collage that kids will want to read. So getting recruited, you know, all these kids that I coach, I mean, these little kids after tournaments, you know, little 20, 30s that I work with, they're like, how do I get better? But sometimes what they're really asking, what their parents want, is how to get recruited. And I kept saying the same thing over and over again, was be so good, coaches can't ignore you. And at that young age, especially, that's what they need to work on. And listening to your podcast, and you've talked to a lot of people that know a lot more insights on recruiting than me. But what they're all saying is, you got to be a very, very good lacrosse player, right? You got to be a great student, and you got to be a great person that I want to recruit into my family, who's going to be a representation of my program forever. So if you can be so good, they can't ignore you. Every time I go to practice, and this is what I want my little guys to do, I want my college kids to do, I want to get 1% more resilient, 1% more confident, 1% more focused on what the coaches are saying, and just enjoy it that much more. If you just work on that, that's what's going to help you with your left-hand shot. You know, those are the things that are going to, the tactical skills will come, right? The lax IQ will come, but only if you bring that mindset to every single practice. And that's really what the book's about. So that how to get recruited. And yes, I have some in there. I give some timelines that are very helpful to me. I give, and the kids I coach will give a letter of how to write a recruiting letter. You know, I talk to a lot of different coaches from different levels. So hopefully it's kind of a collective effort of what coaches want to see. So there's some tactical strategic stuff in there, but what it really is peak performance, being your best, being worthy of getting recruited to your dream school. And we can't, you know, even at our school, if you look at Utah, there's so many great kids who are looking out to us. But if we just sign an ex-attackman who's amazing, and I have another ex-attackman who's also pretty darn good, but we don't have a spot for him, right? You'll find where you belong, even though it's not here, but you're worthy of getting recruited to the school. And if you just think like that, you're going to be happy, right? It's totally in your control if you practice the habits of being the person you want to be.
Now, I think that's the right point to zero in on, because I think ultimately the notion of, and when I call it transactional, what I mean is I am putting something in order to get something out, as opposed to I am putting something in with no expectation, but a lot of hope and faith that I will get out. Maybe not necessarily exactly what I want to, because I think we all have to be, we all have to submit to the fact that we don't actually know what we want, right? We think we have a sense for what we want, and you can kind of create like a wish list and try to go pursue it. But at the same time, like in the same way that none of us knows what the future holds, none of us knows what's going to make us happy, you know, 5 years from now, which is when a lot of these high school players are making decisions, and their happiness is going to be determined. And so as a result, you know, the notion that something isn't going to make you happy because it wasn't on your initial list could be very faulty, especially in the context of understanding that you're being evaluated by people who are very good at it, and they're probably going to be within a certain range of where you belong, meaning the folks who want you to be a part of their program, the fact that they want you to be a part of their program is in many ways an endorsement of the fact that that is where you belong, right? There's always going to be moonshots and programs for which, you know, players are better than those levels, and they're probably also going to get recruited by the programs that are, you know, more successful. But then, you know, to the folks for whom a program of a certain level is reaching out to them, and that's the most competitive program that's reaching out to them, it is an indication that that's probably the level that they belong at. And so I want to bring that idea back around to discipline, because, again, I think that, you know, the dissatisfaction that is born out of so much of the recruiting process is a function of, I put something in, I thought I was going to get something out of it, and I didn't get what I wanted out of it. Now, I just addressed the notion of, A, that's not going to be the approach that leads to the best result, and B, you don't really know what you want. So let's get back to the notion of discipline, because what that is committing to doing something in pursuit of an outcome, but understanding that holding yourself accountable to actually doing it, and that is effectively putting something in without expecting the reward. So how do you describe discipline? And especially, how do you describe discipline in the way where, like, nobody is perfect, right? So I'm sure that you have... You made the comment, it's hard to have a bad day when you have a good morning. But I'm sure you've had a bad morning, right? I'm sure they get sprinkled in. How do you overcome the internal disappointment of falling short of a 100% discipline goal?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's okay, right, to fail, right? It's okay to miss a day of your workout. Let's try not to miss 2 days. So there's always days where you don't feel like doing things. You know, you could be sick. You just might not have that mindset. But what's really important to remember there is when I feel that way, I want to double down on my protocol. And the protocol is what I'm trying to talk about in this book. It's one, discipline, knowing who I want to be, right? I feel like I know who I want to be. You know, if you've done the work, hopefully, you know, all these kids know who they want to be. And some of them don't, right? So you got to take the time to really figure out who you want to be. So it might start out with your goal. I want to get recruited to my dream school. Right? It might be a specific school. Well, that's it. Who do I need to be to get recruited there? So now we have this big goal that I'm always looking at. And it's more of an identity goal. So in the book, we talk about the kid wants to, you know, have all these things, all American, be great. So his identity goal for lacrosse is the Tasmanian Devil version of Connor Schellenberger, right? He's an attackman. He can see a model of who he wants to be. He picks a great lacrosse player with the skill set he wants, and he picks the Looney Tunes cartoon because he wants to play with that intensity. He wants to be that superhero version of Connor Schellenberger even better. So now you go through your day with that discipline in mind that I want to be this person. And as long as we can remember who we want to be, we're going to be that person. The problem with life, and tell me if I'm wrong, we're going to get distracted. Like, there's a million things in life distracting us from exactly who we want to be. So really all mental training is, in my opinion, is reminding yourself throughout the day of who you want to be. So when you wake up in the morning, have a plan. So if this, then that, you know, creating these kind of algorithms or these habits for your day, planning out what your ideal day looks like. And this is your protocol you want to double down on when you're having an off day. When you don't feel like doing it, that's the time to double down. But if you know who you want to be, well, now you know the habits you need to practice to be that person, because we've all heard we become our habits. So we got to practice those habits. So just waking up, right? If this kid wants to be the Tasmanian Devil version of Connor Schellenberger, right? If he sees himself as that person, he can remember that identity, that one trigger word. And you hear a lot of coaches, you know, have a single word to get your trigger, like on defense, not to get distracted, but to get back on track. In this book is identity. So he wakes up, Tasmanian Devil Connor Schellenberger. Well, what would that person do? What would be the first habit do you think that person would do, Terry?
That's a good question. Well, so just specifically, and I want to come back to energy in a minute here, but I really liked the elements of the way that you start your day, right? So burpees to get your belly flowing, and drink water just in order to I'm in the first thing I do every morning is drink water. I think it is so essential to clarity and everything about your body functioning the way that you want to do, especially because I also drink coffee. And so I think you need to drink a lot of water before you start drinking coffee in order to not get overwhelmed and have the negative effects of the coffee actually manifest. The first thing that somebody who wants to be Connor Schellenberger should do. I don't know, man. You tell
me. Would you check your phone when you first wake up?
Well, if you told me the thing you wouldn't do, I would say that.
There you go. Good. So that's kind of how the book starts out. It's like writing down, taking inventory of all your habits. So in that, he's like, oh, the character, Jordan, in the book says, I check my phone. Like, okay, is that helping you have a better day? Or would you have a better day if you woke up and you said to yourself, today's going to be a great day, right? Something that's easy to do, easy not to do, but we're trying to build these tiny habits. And if you look at, if you've read Atomic Habits by James Clear or Tiny Habits by BJ Fogg, they're saying these little things are what makes everything. So we're looking for tiny habits. If I wake up, then today's going to be a great day, right? Next, if I want to be that superhero version, the best lacrosse player in the country, if this, then I say that to myself, well, that reminds me and triggers me to roll out of bed and start doing my 10 burpees. If I'm doing my burpees, then I have mantras prepared for every one. So the first one, right, it could be, I know what I want. I know to practice discipline. So each rep, you can do something to just re-engage yourself to be the person you want to be. When you finish that, if that, then that, you go into the bathroom. Hopefully you have some inspiration, you know, written up or whatever works for you. And again, this isn't for everything, but if you think of yourself as that superhero best lacrosse version, you can create a protocol to practice the habits you think that person would be.
The point about picking up your phone as the first thing that you do is a really interesting one, because I think it manifests differently depending on what type of person you want to be based on the functional role that the phone plays in all of our lives. And I think the core distinction that everything else stems from is, are you a person for whom yourself is the most important element, or are you a person for whom others are the most important element, or are you a person for whom the world is what is the most important element? Because I think that your phone almost inherently takes you outside of yourself, right? It is your pathway to the rest of the world. If you want to be very, very focused on yourself, I think that being focused on your phone makes it very challenging. I think that if you are someone who is in pretty constant communication with the people in your world, and oftentimes whether it's providing feedback or making decisions or being aware of what else is going on, then your phone is your pathway to that, right? It is messages that have come in while you were sleeping that you need to be aware of and get back to with some measure of urgency. It might not necessarily have to be the first thing that you do, but you know, at some point, as you get your day started, you know, taking in that information and pushing information back out into the world as needed is very important. And then, you know, lastly, there are some people for whom engaging with the world is their raison d'etre. It is what they care the most about. And so, you know, again, the method of engaging with the rest of the world is predominantly through your phone. And so I think that for folks that focus on high performance as individuals, specifically in the physical realm, it's probably going to over-index on the requirement of being very internally focused. But I do think that that it's funny because, you know, I'm probably rationalizing a little bit for myself. I am somebody for whom looking at the phone pretty quickly is a big part of what I do. But, you know, it's in service of the fact that there are, you know, inside lacrosse employees who are looking to get an article read. And so it's important for me to know that that's waiting there for me to read, you know, at 7:25 a.m., right? Or whatever time I'm getting out of bed. And so as a result, like my point is that it's a reflection of the things that you have previously said, which is like, who are you? What do you want to be in the world? And how are you interacting with the world in order to achieve the outcome that you're looking for?
No, for sure. And that's great. And, you know, everyone is different and I don't have all the answers. And writing this book was so awesome because, you know, I'm putting out there what I think and then I hear what other people think. So it's a collaborative effort. I changed a lot in the book, be like, oh, well, this isn't the right way. This is certainly no only way, a lot of ways. But the question I'd ask you, are you more engaged and better of your employees, better with your wife, better with the people around you. If you take care of yourself first, you put your seatbelt on. I think a lot of peak performance folks is like, man, I want to be energized. I want to be feeling great. And then I'm going to be better to the people around me.
Yeah, and that was one of the like reasons that I was selfishly asking about discipline, because I do wonder how much my habits are informed by a path of least resistance as opposed to being disciplined about the approach. And, you know, I'm an evening worker outer. I am an evening mindfulness person. I am an evening planning for my next day person. And so, you know, I tend to be in the morning somebody who gets up and gets going in a way that it is not nearly as internally focused as you are, right? And so the question that I have is, am I like, I say this a lot to like the people that I'm close to. I think my worst personality trait is I am bad at waking up. And you can make an argument. It's like, all right, well, then that's the thing that you need to focus most on improving. And I would argue, or not argue, I would wonder if, like, or is it just, it is just a fact of who I am and I'm best served to, you know, try to work around it. And, there's a constant collision there, especially when in the instances in which I have fought against myself and created a habit to wake up earlier and more. It's not even waking up earlier. It's immediately getting going. Like I am like a snooze alarm person, or, you know, a like lay there and just be awake, but not a get out of bed for a little while type of person. And those are the things that probably are the limitation on being more of an early morning person than I might otherwise be.
Yeah. No, and that's 100%. I mean, that's great. And we are all different. So you got to create your own process. I think the point of the book is to create a process, plan out what your ideal day looks like, right? And live it every day. And when you make them, when you don't do the things that you want to do, right? You want to be nice to yourself. And there's a good book on that. It's by Kristen Neff, but just all about, you got to be nice to yourself. We want to have high standards, but we also want to have high warmth, right? So that's the kids we coach, but that's also with ourselves. We got to be nice to ourselves. Right. The best players aren't missing a shot and, you know, breaking their stick over their knee. You're nice to yourself when you make a mistake or don't do what you want to do. Now, for you in the mornings, you don't want to be as intense. And my fiance, same way. She's not up. She's like, do not wake me up when you're doing all these things. You better be quiet. Don't do these burpees by the bed like you used to. You got to get out to the other room. Right. So she has her own process that works for her. And I think we're all that way. In the book, what's really, to me, cool about it is I'm not telling you what to do. I'm not telling you even to drink water. I'm not telling you to do burpees. It's kind of examples of elite performers, you know, great coaches I've talked to, all the books I've read. This is what they suggest. It's just options of stuff you can do. But it's up to you to pick what works for you, because I'm never going to know what's going to work for Terry Foy. You know yourself.
Sure.
You just got to plan that out so it fits within your day and your idiosyncratic process.
So I mentioned I want to talk a little bit more about energy. Do you believe that there is a significant distinction between authentic and inauthentic energy? Or do you think that even inauthentic energy has values and particularly potentially some, you know, a lot of value?
Now, that's a great question. You know, you always hear, you know, fake it till you make it. You know, you look at on the sidelines and if a bunch of players on the team are down, they're not chatting, but you see other teams who are jumping around, celebrating goals. It is contagious, you know, and we want that feeling. That energy is going to help us, right, practice all the other virtues you want to practice. And he talked about that with Frank Kelly, just was love as a virtue, as an action, not just an emotion. Well, if I want to practice love, I need energy to do it. If I want to practice confidence, I need energy. To practice gratitude, I need energy. So if I don't have anything, well, I want to have a process of what gives me energy. So just like you said, like some days, you know, you don't feel like waking up and doing these things. You're just not in it. You're not feeling like working out. Well, when you don't feel like something, what the book advocates for is double downing on the things that are going to help you feel the way you want to feel. So if you know what your best day looks like, and just like for every chapter, it's if this, then that. So if this, then that, habits around eating, sleeping, moving, meditating and focusing, right? Having a process in place, not my process, but having a process that works for you so you feel the way you want is just really important to focus on and double down on, especially when you don't feel like it. So to come full circle, yeah, if I don't have energy on the sidelines, I look back at my team, right? Maybe for me, you know, going, starting a mosh pit might be what gives me energy. It might not be for everyone, but hopefully that mosh pit for the guys who doesn't jack them up is a reminder to do the things that are going to help them feel energetic so they can love and serve their team.
Totally. And not only that, but also it's a reflection, or not even a reflection. It's like, you know, it's part of the notion of it's selflessness, meaning that like a mosh pit might not be what I need, but if it's what everybody else needs, then I'm going to do it in service of everybody else. And that for me would qualify as inauthentic energy, right? Participating in a mosh pit, knowing that it is not the thing that is going to jack you up, but is going to provide benefit and value for your teammates, is like, yeah, I don't have a better way to put it. It's inauthentic energy, but it's selfless and it works. So it works. It doesn't work for you. Then it becomes incumbent on you to then figure out, all right, well, what's that version? What's the version of that for me? And how am I going to go pursue that and make it happen?
I think that's such a great point right there. And yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. And that's kind of what this book is. It's like, I hear great conversations with you, other great coaches, and I'm like, oh, I want to write this into the book so other people can learn from it. And when I go back to coach my kids, I remember to say that. So I think what you said there, it's, I don't feel like it. I don't feel like being energetic. But there's another great book in it, at this guy, Eric Greitens. He's a SEAL, and he's like, identity first, right? I see myself a certain way. Connor Schellenberger, Tasmanian Devil, or world's best teammate, whatever identity you have for the situation you're in, then I start behaving a certain way. So if my identity as a teammate is world's best teammate, right? So I want to be the world's best teammate to my guys. Well, what would he do? And as you said, it might not work for me, but the world's best teammate would go over, lead the team in high fives. And when I start behaving a certain way, then I start feeling a certain way. So maybe totally. It gets you going, but the opposite is, I got to wait for it to be authentic and feel a certain way. That's going to be a tough life, because a lot of times we don't really control our feelings, but we can control our identity, how we see ourselves, and the habits that we're going to practice to be that identity.
Totally. And I don't think inauthentic is an unfair word, but I do think it is a harsh word. And I think that a less harsh and roughly equivalently accurate word is manufactured, right? And it's about like creating something that might not necessarily otherwise be there organically, but again, has value, is something that's going to bring about the result that you want to bring about. And so as a result, you do it, right? And it's kind of the same thing. I mean, it really, to the point about like, the question about, was this an outline or sequential? Like, you know, this conversation has doubled back on itself so many times, because manufacturing is kind of the same thing as discipline, right? And being in pursuit of an outcome and understanding, to your point about identity, like the work that goes into figuring out who you are as a person, right? Like that is discipline in and of itself as well. So there's a lot that, you know, we're kind of talking around that have like strong redundancies and duplications kind of within both points of view and the conversation in total.
Yeah. And what you're saying there, it's true. Like that's the whole thing. Like in any game where you can't be thinking about, okay, I bring my hands back to shoot. All right. I have my chin on my shoulder, arms back. I'm going to follow through in the right way. Like, yeah, we practice that. You have a plan, and that's for a day. I want to plan out my ideal day. But when the day comes, man, you got to let it rip. You got to trust yourself. You can't be thinking about your plans, right? It's good to reflect in the morning and the day, but trust yourself. You can look back. Did I act the way I wanted to do? Right? If not, you know, you say to yourself, needs work, right? If you hit something you like, you're like, that's like me. You reinforce what you like, but you don't beat yourself up. That's not what it's about. It's having a plan, but guess what? You get punched in the face, all that plan goes to heck, and you just got to live in the moment.
We've talked about the why and the how of writing a book, but you mentioned you put it out into the world, and there's a very interesting relationship with physical media, and particularly the written word, which is you get a certain amount of feedback. It's definitely not 100%, right? In the way that, you know, something they might do online is going to get a higher percentage of engagement that you are aware of. But what's it been like to get feedback, and what has the feedback largely been?
Yeah, Terry, it's been awesome. You know, hearing how I use it, and I think a lot of coaches could do with your team, is we read it during a Zoom call. And because it's written like a script, I'll play the part of the coach, or sometimes I'll get, you know, a professional player, someone to come in that they look up to play the part of the coach. And the kids take turn engaging, being the student who's going through this journey, the player, and it keeps them engaged. But then hearing after a Zoom call, and these are like little kids, and the parents like, I don't know what you said to my son, but it was a snowstorm. He shoveled it out so he can get the wall and start playing. He's drinking lemon juice in the morning. All these things that, you know, I haven't even told him to do, but a lot of the habits, the parents are on the call and they're like, good, listen to him, because it's exactly what I'm saying, but it comes from a coach or somebody that you respect, not respect, but somebody who is lacrosse is important to you. The kids care more. So the parents love that. It's been great, you know, hearing from other coaches, and either good or bad, because a lot of it, it's everyone agrees to it to an extent. But when we have disagreements, it's amazing because that gives me an idea for the next book, or like, oh, I didn't mean to live that out. I want to teach this to my players to help them be the best they can be. So that's what really the book's designed to be, is this collective effort of all the best books who have helped me and all the great coaches and mentors that I've looked up to, listening to them talk and trying to put it into a system that any coach can repeat. And as you read these things, you can stop at any sentence and jump off and talk about a certain point for a half an hour, but it just leads to discussions that might not even come up in the 4 years that we coach these kids.
Folks that have listened to this that want to dive into the Dojo Decision, how can they find it?
It's on Amazon, also dojodecision.com. Yeah, if you can go there, if you want it for your team, you can get team discounts. But yeah, a lot of options to get a read. But thank you so much for having me, Terry.
Thanks so much, Tim. Really appreciate it, and very much looking forward to watching the Utes get back on the field in the spring.
Let's go. Thank you.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.